Scanners Live in Vain by Cordwainer Smith. Part 2. 3. Martell, still crouched, shuddered as he heard the boos, groans, shouts, squeaks, grunts, and moans that came from the scanners who forgot noise in their excitement and strove to make their dead bodies talk to one another's deaf ears. Belt lights flashed wildly all over the room. There was a rush for the rostrum, and scanners milled around at the top, vying for attention, until Parisiansky, by sheer bulk, shoved the others aside and down, and turned to mouth at the group.
"Brother scanners, I want your eyes!"
The people on the floor kept moving, with their numb bodies jostling one another. Finally, Vomac stepped up in front of Parisiansky, faced the others, and said,
"Scanners! Be scanners! Give him your eyes!"
Parisiansky was not good at public speaking. His lips moved too fast. He waved his hands, which took the eyes of the others away from his lips. Nonetheless, Martell was able to follow most of the message.
"Can't do this! Storm may have succeeded. If he has succeeded, it means the end of scanners. It means the end of Habermans, too. None of us will have to fight in the up and out. We won't have anybody else going under the wire for a few hours or days of being human. Everybody will be other. Nobody will have to crunch. Never again. Men can be men. The Habermans can be killed decently and properly, the way men were killed in the old days, without keeping them alive. They won't have to work in the up and out. There will be no more great pain. Think of it. No more great pain. How do we know that Stone is a liar?"
Lights began flashing directly into his eyes. The rudest insult of scanner to scanner was this. Vomac again exercised authority. He stepped in front of Parisiansky and said something which the others could not see. Parisiansky stepped down from the rostrum. Vomac again spoke.
"I think that some of the scanners disagree with our brother Parisiansky. I say that the use of the rostrum be suspended till we have had a chance for private discussion. In 15 minutes I will call the meeting back to order."
Martell looked around for Vomac when the senior had rejoined the group on the floor. Finding the senior, Martell wrote swift script on his tablet, waiting for a chance to thrust the tablet before the senior's eyes. He had written, "M. Cranched, respectfully request permission, leave now. Stand by for orders." Being Cranched did strange things to Martell. Most meetings that he had attended seemed formal, hearteningly ceremonial, lighting up the dark, inward eternities of Habermanhood. When he was not Cranched, he noticed his body no more than a marble bust notices its marble pedestal. He had stood with them effortless hours, while the long-winded ritual broke through the terrible loneliness behind his eyes, and made him feel that the scanners, though a confraternity of the damned, were nonetheless forever honored by the professional requirements of their mutilation. This time it was different. Coming Cranched and in full possession of smell, sound, taste, feeling, he reacted more or less as a normal man would. He saw his friends and colleagues as a lot of cruelly driven ghosts, posturing out of the meaningless ritual of their indefeasible damnation. What differences did anything make once you were a Haberman? Why all this talk about Habermans and scanners? Habermans were criminals or heretics, and scanners were gentlemen, volunteers, but they were all in the same fix, except the scanners were deemed worthy of the short-time return of the cranching wire, while Habermans were simply disconnected while the ships lay in port and were left suspended until they should be awakened in some hour of emergency or trouble to work out another spell of their damnation. It was a rare Haberman that you saw on the street, someone of special merit or bravery, allowed to look at mankind from the terrible prison of his own mechanified body. And yet, what scanner ever pitied a Haberman? What scanner ever honored a Haberman? except perfunctorily in the line of duty. What had the Scanners, as a guild and a class, ever done for the Habermans, except to murder them with a twist of the wrist whenever a Haberman, too long beside a Scanner, picked up the tricks of the scanning trade and learned to live at his own will, not the will the Scanners imposed? What could the others, the ordinary men, know of what went on inside the ships? The others slept in their cylinders, mercifully unconscious, until they woke up on whatever other earth they had consigned themselves to. What could the others know of the men who had to stay alive within the ships? What could any other know of the up and out? What other could look at the biting acid beauty of the stars in open space? What could they tell of the great pain which started quietly in the marrow like an ache and preceded by the fatigue and nausea of each separate nerve cell, brain cell, touch point in the body, until life itself became a terrible, aching hunger for silence and for death? All right, he was a Scanner. He had been a Scanner from the moment when, wholly normal, he had stood in the sunlight before a sub-chief of the instrumentality and had sworn, "I pledge my honor and my life to mankind. I sacrifice myself willingly for the welfare of mankind. In accepting the perilous, austere honor, I yield all my rights, without exception, to the honorable chiefs of the instrumentality and to the honored confraternity of Scanners." He had pledged. He had gone into the Haberman device. He remembered his hell. He had not had such a bad one, even though it had seemed to last 100 million years, all of them without sleep. He had learned to feel with his eyes. He had learned to see despite the heavy eye plates set back of his eyeballs to insulate his eyes from the rest of him. He had learned to watch his skin. He still remembered the time he had noticed dampness on his shirt, had pulled out his scanning mirror, only to discover that he had worn a hole in his side by leaning against a vibrating machine. A thing like that could not happen to him now. He was too adept at reading his own instruments. He remembered the way he had gone up and out, and the way that the great pain beat into him, despite the fact that his touch, smell, feeling, and hearing were gone for all ordinary purposes. He remembered killing Habermans and keeping others alive, and standing for months beside the honorable Scanner pilot while neither of them slept. He remembered going ashore on Earth, for remembered he had not enjoyed it, and had realized on that day that there was no reward. Martell stood among the other Scanners. He hated their awkwardness when they moved, their immobility when they stood still. He hated the queer assortment of smells which their bodies yielded unnoticed. He hated the grunts and groans and squawks which they emitted from their deafness. He hated them and himself. How could Lucy stand him? He had kept his chest box reading danger for weeks while he courted her, carrying the cranching wire about with him most illegally, and going direct from one cranch to the other without worrying about the fact that his indicators all crept to the edge of overload. He had wooed her without thinking of what would happen if she did say yes. She had. And they had lived happily ever after. In the old books they did, but how could they in life? He had 18 days under the wire in the hold the past year, yet she had loved him. She still loved him. He knew it. She fretted about him through the long months that he was in the up and out. She tried to make home mean something to him, even when he was Haberman, make food pretty when it could not be tasted, make herself lovable when she could not be kissed, or might as well not, since a Haberman body meant no more than furniture. Lucy was patient. And now, Adam Stone. He let his tablet fade. How could he leave now? God bless Adam Stone. Martell could not help feeling a little sorry for himself. No longer would the high keen call of duty carry him through 200 or so years of the other's time. 2 million private eternities of his own. He could slouch and relax. He could forget high space and let the up and out be tended by others. He could cranch as much as he dared. He could be almost normal. Almost. For 1 year, or 5 years, or no years. But at least he could stay with Lucy. He could go with her into the wild, where there were beasts and old machines still roving the dark places. Perhaps he would die in the excitement of the hunt, throwing spears at an ancient steel Monchenjäger as it leapt from its lair, or tossing hot spears at the tribesmen of the Unforgiven who still roam the wild. There was still life to live, still a good, normal death to die, not the moving of a needle out in the silence and pain of space. He had been walking about restlessly. His ears were attuned to the sounds of normal speech, so that he did not feel like watching the mouthings of his brethren. Now they seemed to have come to a decision. Vomacht was moving to the rostrum. Martell looked about for Chang and went to stand beside him. Chang whispered, "You're as restless as water in mid-air. What's the matter? Are you decranching?" They both scanned Martell, but the instruments held steady and showed no signs of the cranch giving out. The great light flared in its call to attention. Again they formed ranks. Vomacht thrust his lean old face into the glare and spoke,
"Scatters and brothers, I call for a vote!"
He held himself in the stance which meant, "I am the senior and take command." A belt light flashed in protest. It was old Henderson. He moved to the rostrum, spoke to Vomacht, and with Vomacht's nod of approval, turned full face to repeat his question.
"Who speaks for the scanners out in space?"
No belt light or hand answered. Henderson and Vomacht, face to face, conferred for a few moments. Then Henderson faced them again.
"I yield to the senior in command, but I do not yield to a meeting of the confraternity. There are 68 scanners, and only 47 present, of whom one is cranched. And UD, I have therefore proposed that the senior in command assume authority only over an emergency committee of the confraternity, not over a meeting. Is that agreed and understood by the honorable scanners?"
Hands rose in assent. Chang murmured in Martell's ear, "Lot of difference that makes. Who can tell the difference between a meeting and a committee?" Martell agreed with the words, but was even more impressed with the way that Chang, while Haberman, could control his own voice. Vomacht resumed chairmanship.
"We now vote on the question of Adam Stone. First, we can assume he has not succeeded and that his claims are lies. We know that from our practical experience as scanners. The pain of space is only part of scanning."
But the essential part, the basis of it all, thought Martell.
"And we can rest assured that Stone cannot solve the problem of space discipline."
"That tripe again," whispered Chang, unheard save by Martell.
"The space discipline of our confraternity has kept high space clean of war and dispute. 68 disciplined men control all high space. We are removed by our oath and our Haberman status from all earthly passions. Therefore, if Adam Stone has conquered the pain of space so that others can wreck our confraternity and bring to space the trouble and ruin which afflicts Earths, I say that Adam Stone is wrong. If Adam Stone succeeds, scanners live in vain. Secondly, if Adam Stone has not conquered the pain of space, he will cause great trouble in all the Earths. The instrumentality and the subchiefs may not give us as many Habermans as we need to operate the ships of mankind, There will be wild stories and fewer recruits. And worst of all, the discipline of the confraternity may relax if this kind of nonsensical heresy is spread around. Therefore, if Adam Stone has succeeded, he threatens the ruin of the confraternity and should die. Therefore, if Adam Stone has not succeeded, he is a liar and a heretic and should die. I move the death of Adam Stone.
And Vomac made the sign. The honorable scanners are pleased to vote. 4. Martell grabbed wildly for his belt light. Chang, guessing ahead, had his light out and ready. Its bright beam, voting no, shone straight up at the ceiling. Martell got his light out and threw its beam upward in descent. Then he looked around. Out of the 47 present, he could only see 5 or 6 glittering. 2 more lights went on. Vomac stood erect as a frozen corpse. Vomac's eyes flashed as he stared back and forth over the group, looking for lights. Several more went on. Finally, Vomac took the closing stance. May it please the scanners to count the vote. 3 of the older men went up on the rostrum with Vomac. They looked over the room. Martell thought, these damn ghosts are voting on the life of a real man, a live man. They have no right to do it. I'll tell the instrumentality. But he knew he would not. He thought of Lucy and what she might gain by the triumph of Adam Stone. The heartbreaking folly of the vote was then almost too much for Martell to bear. All 3 of the tellers held up their hands in unanimous agreement on the sign of the numbers, 15 against. Vomac dismissed them with a bow of courtesy. He turned and again took the stance. I am the senior and take command. Marveling at his own daring, Martell flashed his belt light on. He knew that any one of the bystanders might reach over and twist his heart box to overload for such an act. He felt Chang's hand reaching to catch him by the air coat, but he eluded Chang's grasp and ran, faster than a scanner should, to the platform. As he ran, he wondered what appeal to make. He wouldn't get time to say much, and he wouldn't be seen by all of them. It was no use talking common sense. Not now. It had to be law. He jumped up on the rostrum beside Vomac and took the stance. Scanners and illegality. He violated good custom while speaking, still in the stance.
A committee has no right to vote death by a majority vote. It takes 2/3 of a full meeting.
He felt Vomac's body lunge behind him. He felt himself falling from the rostrum, hitting the floor, hurting his knees and his touch-aware hands. He was helped to his feet. He was scanned. Some scanner he scarcely knew took his instruments and toned him down. Immediately, Martell felt more calm, more detached, and hated himself for feeling so. He looked up at the rostrum. Vomac maintained the stance, signifying order. The scanners adjusted their ranks. The 2 scanners next to Martell took his arms. He shouted at them, but they looked away and cut themselves off from communication altogether. Vomac spoke again when he saw the room was quiet.
A scanner came here crunched. Honorable scanners, I apologize for this. It is not the fault of our great and worthy scanner and friend Martell. He came here under orders. I told him not to decrunch. I hoped to spare him an unnecessary haberman. We all know how happily Martell is married, and we wish his brave experiment well. I like Martell. I respect his judgment. I wanted him here. I knew you wanted him here. But he is crunched. He is in no mood to share in the lofty business of the scanners. I therefore propose a solution which will meet all the requirements of fairness. I propose that we rule Scanner Martell out of order for his violation of rules. This violation would be inexcusable if Martell were not crunched. But, at the same time, in all fairness to Martell, I further propose that we deal with the points raised so improperly by our worthy but disqualified brother.
Vomac gave the sign. The honorable scanners are pleased to vote. Martell tried to reach his own belt light. The dead, strong hands held him tightly as he struggled in vain. One lone light shone high. Chang's, no doubt. Vomac thrust his face into the light again.
Having the approval of our worthy scanners and present company for the general proposal, I now move that this committee declare itself to have the full authority of a meeting, and that this committee further make me responsible for all misdeeds which this committee may enact, and to be held answerable before the next full meeting, but not before any other authority beyond the closed and secret ranks of scanners.
Flamboyantly this time, his triumph evident, Vomac assumed the vote stance. Only a few lights shone, far less patently than a minority of 1/4. Vomac spoke again. The light shone on his high, calm forehead, on his dead, relaxed cheekbones. His lean cheeks and chin were half-shadowed, save where the lower light picked up and spotlighted his mouth, cruel even in repose. Vomac was said to be the descendant of some ancient lady who had traversed, in an illegitimate and inexplicable fashion, some hundreds of years of time in a single night. Her name, the Lady Vomac, had passed into legend, but her blood and her archaic lust for mastery lived on in the mute, masterful body of her descendant. Martell could believe the old tales as he stared at the rostrum, wondering what untraceable mutation had left the Vomac kith as predators among mankind. Calling aloud with the movement of his lips, but still without sound, Vomac appealed.
The Honorable Committee is now pleased to reaffirm the sentence of death issued against the heretic and enemy, Adam Stone.
Again the vote stance. Again Chang's light shone lonely in its isolated protest. Vomac then made his final move.
I call for the designation of the senior scanner present as the manager of the sentence. I call for authorization to him to appoint executioners, one or many, who shall make evident the will and majesty of scanners. I ask that I be accountable for the deed, and not for the means. The deed is a noble deed, for the protection of mankind and for the honor of the scanners. But of the means it must be said that they are to be the best at hand and no more. Who knows the true way to kill another, here on a crowded and watchful earth? This is no mere matter of discharging a cylindered sleeper, no mere question of upgrading the needle of a Haberman. When people die here, it is not like the up and out. They die reluctantly. Killing within the earth is not our usual business, O brothers and scanners, as you well know. You must choose me to choose my agent as I see fit. Otherwise, the common knowledge will become the common betrayal, whereas if I alone know the responsibility, I alone could betray us, and you will not have far to look in case the instrumentality comes searching.
What about the killer you choose? Thought Martell. He too will know, unless you silence him forever too. Vomac went to the stance. The honorable scanners are pleased to vote. One light shone in protest. Chang's again. Martell imagined he could see a cruel, joyful smile on Vomac's dead face. The smile of a man who knew himself righteous and who found his righteousness upheld and affirmed by militant authority. Martell tried one last time to come free. The dead hands held. They were locked like vices until their owner's eyes unlocked them. How else could they hold the piloting of a ship month by month? Martell then shouted,
Honorable Scanners, this is judicial murder.
No ear heard him. He was cranched and alone. Nonetheless, he shouted again,
"You endanger the confraternity!"
Nothing happened. The echo of his voice sounded from one end of the room to the other. No head turned. No eyes met his. Martell realized that as they paired for talk, the eyes of the Scanners avoided him. He saw that no one desired to watch his speech. He knew that behind the cold faces of his friends there lay compassion or amusement. He knew that they knew him to be cranched, absurd, normal, manlike, temporarily no Scanner. But he knew that in this matter the wisdom of Scanners was nothing. He knew that only a cranched Scanner could feel with his very blood the outrage and anger which deliberate murder would provoke among the others. He knew that the confraternity endangered itself, and knew that the most ancient prerogative of law was the monopoly of death. Even the ancient nations, in the time of the wars, before the wild machines, before the beasts, before man went into the up and out, even the ancients had known this. How did they say it? Only the state shall kill. The states were gone, but the instrumentality remained, and the instrumentality could not pardon things which occurred within the earths, but beyond its authority. Death in space was the business, the right of the Scanners. How could the instrumentality enforce its law in a place where all men who wakened, wakened only to die in the great pain? Wisely did the instrumentality leave space to the Scanners. Wisely had the confraternity not meddled inside the earths. And now the confraternity itself was going to step forth as an outlaw band, as a gang of rogues, as stupid and reckless as the tribes of the unforgiven. Martell knew this because he was cranched. Had he been Haberman, he would have thought only with his mind, not with his heart and guts and blood. How could the other Scanners know? Vomacht returned for the last time to the rostrum. The committee has met, and its will shall be done. Verbally, he added,
"Senior among you, I ask your loyalty and your silence."
At that point, the two Scanners let his arms go. Martell rubbed his numb hands, shaking his fingers to get the circulation back into the cold fingertips. With real freedom, he began to think of what he might still do. He scanned himself. The cranching held. He might have an hour. He might have a day. Well, he could go on, even if Haberman, but it would be inconvenient, having to talk with finger and tablet. He looked about for Chang. He saw his friend standing patient and immobile in a quiet corner. Martell moved slowly, so as not to attract any more attention to himself than could be helped. He faced Chang, moved until his face was in the light, and then articulated,
"What are we going to do? You're not going to let them kill Adam Stone, are you? Don't you realize what Stone's work will mean to us? If it succeeds, no more scanning, no more Scanners, no more Habermans, no more pain in the up and out. I tell you, if the others were all cranched like I am, they would see it in a human way, not with the narrow, crazy logic which they used in the meeting. We've got to stop them. How can we do it? What are we going to do? What does Parisiansky think? Who's been chosen?"
"Which question do you want me to answer?" Martell laughed. It felt good to laugh, even then. I felt like being a man.
"Will you help me?"
Chang's eyes flashed across Martell's face as Chang answered,
"No, no, no."
"You won't help?"
"No."
"Why not, Chang? Why not?"
"I am a Scanner. The vote has been taken. You would do the same if you were not in this unusual condition."
"I'm not in an unusual condition. I'm cranched. That merely means that I see things the way that others would. I see the stupidity, the recklessness, the selfishness. It's murder."
"What is murder? Have you not killed? You are not one of the others. You are a Scanner. You will be sorry for what you are about to do if you do not watch out.
But why did you vote against Vomac then? Didn't you too see what Adam Stone means to all of us? Scanners will live in vain. Thank God for that. Can't you see it?
No.
But you talk to me, Chang. You're my friend.
I talk to you. I am your friend. Why not?
But what are you going to do?
Nothing, Martel. Nothing.
Will you help me?
No.
Not even to save Stone?
No.
Then I'll go to Parisiansky for help.
It will do no good.
Why not? He's more human than you right now.
He will not help you because he has the job.
Vomac designated him to kill Adam Stone. Martel stopped speaking in mid-movement. He suddenly took the stance. I thank you, brother, and I depart. At the window, he turned and faced the room. He saw that Vomac's eyes were upon him. He gave the stance. I thank you, brother, and I depart, and added the flourish of respect which is shown when seniors are present. Vomac caught the sign, and Martel could see the cruel lips move. He thought he saw the words,
Take good care of yourself,
but did not wait to inquire. He stepped backwards and dropped out of the window. Once below the window and out of sight, he adjusted his air coat to maximum speed. He swam lazily in the air, scanning himself thoroughly and adjusting his adrenal intake down. He then made the movement of release and felt the cold air rush past his face like running water. Adam Stone had to be at Chief Downport. Adam Stone had to be there. Wouldn't Adam Stone be surprised in the night? Surprised to meet the strangest of beings, the first renegade among scanners. Martel suddenly appreciated that it was himself of whom he was thinking. Martel, the traitor to the scanners. That sounded strange and bad. But what of Martel, the loyal to mankind? Was that not compensation? And if he won, he won Lucy. If he lost nothing. An unconsidered and expendable Haberman. It happened to be himself. But in contrast to the immense reward to mankind, to the confraternity, to Lucy, what did that matter? Martel thought to himself, Adam Stone will have two visitors tonight, two scanners who are the friends of one another. He hoped that Parisiansky was still his friend. And the world, he added, depends on which of us gets there first. Multifaceted in their brightness, the lights of Chief Downport began to shine through the mist ahead. Martel could see the outer towers of the city and glimpsed the phosphorescent periphery which kept back the wild, whether beasts, machines, or the unforgiven. Once more, Martel invoked the lords of his chance. Help me to pass for an other.